Welcome to Sea Control, your moment of PowerPoint rehab from the Center for International Maritime Security. As always, I am your semi-helpful host and director of online content here at SimSec, Matthew Hipple. This week we have a treat. Our podcast on African border control unfortunately had to be rescheduled. Our Danish friends from Risk Intelligence were the victims of some rather poorly timed neighborhood construction and wire cutting that made that podcast impossible at the moment. But we have something better. John Paris wrote for us an article called The Virtue of Being a Generalist, Part 1, A Day in the Life of Sub-Lieutenant Snodgrass. This is the first of a three-part series, this article in particular dealing with the differences between the way the Royal Navy and the U.S. Navy trains their surface fleet officers. This is a really great conversation. This is just two guys, surface warfare officers, talking about their community and how to make an aspect of it better. It's all done in love. It's really interesting. I think John's got some great points. And of course, all these opinions are ours and not those of the Department of Defense, the Department of Navy. But, you know, it's a really great look, if nothing else, for just how folks in two different communities approach their problems. So sit back, relax, and we'll be back with John Paris after this short break.
Hola, nuestros amigos. Do you like Sea Control? Do you enjoy the SimSec Next World blog? Become part of the discussion and our community. Sign up for SimSec membership at www.simsec.org/about/membership to get our articles and podcasts emailed to you every week, and an account that allows you to submit articles directly to our editors through WordPress. We think Sea Control is a very fine product, but it's nothing without your constant support and engagement. Your ideas keep us going. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
All right, and we are back. Today we're joined by John Paris. We're going to talk about his article on SimSec, The Virtue of Being a Generalist, Part 1, A Day in the Life of Sub-Lieutenant Snodgrass. Now, first question before we start, even introduce yourself. I met a guy who knows you named Snodgrass. Is this directed at a certain individual, or did you just pick that name out of a hat?
I didn't pick it out of a hat either. In my interviews with the Brits, I asked them what the equivalent of Seaman Timmy was, and they said it was Seaman Snodgrass.
See, this is more fun. You're not an important person, so I'm just going to chat randomly with you. Sorry, guy.
Thanks for that.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. All right, so go ahead for everyone. You've been on the show before. You were on here with Ben Coleman. We talked a little bit about innovation. But for the audience that hasn't heard of you or read your little bio at the end of the article, just lay out for them who you are and where you're coming from.
Yeah, I'm John Paris. I'm a SWO. In department head school, getting ready to head back out to the fleet. Did my tours out in Hawaii and Annapolis and Norfolk, and I'm an amateur writer trying to get people to agree with me all the time.
Yeah, there you go.
You know how that goes.
I have no idea what you're talking about. All right, perfect. Well, laid out for us, first question. So your article is you're trying to lay down, and it's part of a series, so for anyone who's read your article, it is going to be part of a three-parter. So this is the first one. We're talking about SWOs, surface warfare officers. So what kind of exposure have you had? What got you to start this article? Because it's something we all talk about, but a lot of this is you talking from engaging a lot with British officers. Did you just go out and do this, or did you have a tour where you had a lot of exposure, or how did this come about? You just said, hey, you know what? We talk about it all the time. I'm going to do it for real.
Well, the writing, the series part came from we talk about it all the time. But certainly I served with HMS Richmond up in Iraq, first tour, and a couple of other British ships on the second tour. Worked with a British officer teaching at the Naval Academy who was head and shoulders above, you know, SWO commanders, to be perfectly blunt, you know, and he was an 04. Worked with a Brit and a Aussie when I was doing the tour down in Norfolk. They were, again, head and shoulders above, you know, most of the folks I met. So, you know, it kind of builds upon itself, you know, becoming a little bit apprehensive about our profession. And then sure enough, here up in Newport, we have Brit instructor who's just, you know, out of this world smart and on stuff that honestly we ought to be smart about too. So that's kind of what it kind of, it all bubbled together through the past 8 years or so, 9 years of serving with these folks. And so that's kind of what I decided to write about. I interviewed a couple of British officers very heavily, went back and forth with them over a period of about a week or so to really try to wrap my head around how they do things, which was challenging because there's not exactly a one-for-one comparison with everything. I interviewed admirals, I interviewed post commanders, guys in command, lot of folks. So
to avoid the trap of, you know, you wrote the article, I've read it, we could start talking about it like that, but not everyone who's listening has. So what was your big takeaway? Give me your big comparison. What is the difference between that SWO pipeline and that Royal Navy pipeline? What was your big observation that was what you kind of took away from your writing your article?
Sure. So my two main comparisons were how they train and then their focus on watch standing over billets on the ships. So those are the two things I focus on. Training, big difference there. They're warfare officers, which is the most the closest thing to our SWOs. They spend about 18 months training before they go onto the ship. Lots of classroom instruction. I'm sure they have their, you know, they have their fair amount of PowerPoint just like we do, unfortunately. But also lots and tons and tons and tons of hours in the simulators. And then even better, very much like our aviators do, tons of hours hands-on on ships, both training ships and out in the fleet. They'll send them out as under instructions out there to get their practical bridge watch standing. So that's kind of a big deal. And then the second thing was the focus on watch standing over billets. When they get orders to their ship, they get orders as officer of the watch number one, officer of the watch number two, and so forth. Not as gunnery officer who will eventually qualify as officer of the deck and stand maybe there or somewhere else on the ship. So their identity is the watch stander. And I think that really has a big a mindset shift from how we do business, because their focus is on a core competency, you know, seamanship, navigation, ship driving, you know, later in their career on warfighting. It's not on the smorgasbord of stuff that we are held responsible for in the U.S. Navy.
You know, and that was the thing that I noticed, and I'm glad you're talking about it like this, because I walked away from the article thinking, like, wow, I'm reading this. I used to kind of think that the British model was better, and now I'm really liking it. I didn't know if it was me missing a point, but it sounds like what you're suggesting. But one of the things you mentioned that is the UI period. So they send them out to the fleet. They're at the Britannia Royal Naval College, which it sounds like a fantastic idea. Instead of, hey, let's have a bunch of institutions where we kind of talk about it, kind of don't. We throw some, you know, throw some summer programs. It's bam, here you go, 18 months, you're here learning. But when they go out to the fleet, so they do that UI. When SWOs go out, so SWOlets, baby SWOs go out, and they get their first Divo, it's kind of like random anything, and you're supposed to get qualified, but then, you know, hey, you're the command simio now and sapper and 1,000 different random things, and you get pulled, and a lot of times it seems like people are using you as an item of convenience. You know, you hear all the stories, people talking about the inability to get qualified because they're qualified in one station and they get stuck there forever. So this UI thing, when they go out to the fleet, is that literally, hey, you're standing OWUI? Or is this like mini Divo tours where they go out and they'll get pulled into collateral duties and stuff like that? Did you go into that much detail?
Sure, I did. And I kept having to go back to it because I didn't fully understand it the first couple of times they explained it to me. But the best way I can translate it is that they are their UI. They're there to learn how to be ship drivers. They're not there to learn how to be divos. So that's the big deal. They're there to get essentially hours, kind of like a logbook, just like the, you know, aviators have so many hours they have to have a requisite amount of hours on their logbook, standing practical bridge watch standing in a variety of scenarios before they can qualify, before they can graduate and go out to the fleet. So that's what they're there for.
Well, what do you think we can pull from this? Because – it feels like we kind of get by on the skin of our teeth. It's a lot of slapdash, and well, hopefully you get cycled through randomly just to the correct number of Divo things, and maybe you've got somebody who knows. I mean, everybody does it. You can't say it's impossible. You know, the SWO community manages it. We have the greatest fleet on the planet, so, you know, we must know something about what we're doing. But what are the major takeaways that you said, you know, we can use this material that the British are using and how we train our junior officers?
Sure. I think that the first takeaway, and I think the question I'm really going to pose in the part three of the series is, what are our core competencies? What does a SWOPIN mean? I don't think we have the answer to those. For the Brits, for their warfare officers, they know what they mean. They are ship drivers. They are mariners. They are navigators. And that is their profession. They later, you know, get better into employing their sensors and their weapons and all that, but they are professionals. And right now, and I think I feel comfortable in saying it, I don't think we are professionals. And one really great quote, and all of my interviews are non-attributional, so I won't go there, but one really great quote that I got during the research process was that success in the surface warfare officer community happens by happenstance, not by design. The community doesn't set folks up for that. Sure, there's initiative and there's the go-getter type of stuff that's got to exist to be successful. But those that really rise to the top get there because they claw their way there, not because they're trained, not because they're professionals. And if they become professionals, they make themselves that. The Navy doesn't do it. The community doesn't do it. And I think that's a real shame. So I think the biggest thing we can take away from the way the Brits do it is, let's make ourselves professionals. Actually be good at something.
Well, I wish I could say I disagreed, but I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that struck me in your article was the difference between the, hey, you don't know anything, but you do everything when a Divo first shows up, vice. It seems very clear that when these warfare officers show up on Royal Navy vessels, they know, this is what I'm doing. And then you have enlisted personnel who have very clear delegated duties that says, you know, I'm in charge of this. You know, this is where I stand. So you're not the Divo. You are an officer, and the guy who does what we would traditionally think of as Divo material is being done by the guys on the deck plates. You know, the technicians who are familiar with the equipment, who are familiar, who have been around, are familiar with their admin processes and all these other things. So we're, it seems like the officers are doing what they're supposed to doing, which is actual oversight, not just double-checking everything everyone does to the point where you become the guy doing it. I mean, would you say that that's accurate, and would you agree? Because this was my sense, is that may have been one of the core things that really changed the game, is it gets to your issue of, hey, I'm a watchstander, you know, my guys can handle all this stuff. Do you think that's really where in the end it comes from, or do you think it's something else?
No, I think I agree with that. I tried over and over again when going back in my interviews to get the Brits to put a definitive statement down that they, you know, for lack of a better term, aren't in a leadership role and just are watchstanders, and they wouldn't do that. So it's important to note that you do practice leadership, they do have oversight of personnel, but what's interesting there is that they're warfare officers, again, which was my focus. Since they're the closest thing to SWOs, their thing is watchstanding. Now they have personnel, they mentor junior officers and all that, but their focus is watchstanding. Now, interestingly enough, they're engineer officers, so they're weapons engineers officers and they're marine engineer officers, which are the two that are pertinent to surface ships. They fill the roles of what we would what we would best describe as division officers and department heads. And they fill the roles of what we traditionally think of as owning people and equipment and maintaining that equipment. They're not LDOs. They're not limited duty officers, as we consider them. They come up through the Royal Naval College with the warfare officers. They're potentially, you know, just guys out of university, just like that. But they're engineers. They maintain the kit, as they say, all of the equipment. And then even more importantly, they oversee the people that are maintaining the kit. So whereas you and I, you know, as SWOs, we are the gunnery officer and own the 5-inch and torpedoes and the mag and VLS and all of this other stuff and all the gunner's mates and FCs and CWIS and all that good stuff, and get, you know, 1,000 different qualifications and stand watch and do all those things. They break that apart, and I think that's where they find their success. And I think that's something that we can take away from them.
What do you think is our – so, you know, you and I, we're SWOs. We're jaded, of course. We're like, oh, grass is greener. What's on our side of the fence? So we're looking at this when we see a professional. You know, you become a professional mariner. You're not a jack of all trades. You know what your business is about. What do we have? So, you know, we say jack of all trades. It's a very, you know, general statement, like, oh, that's a good thing. Well, it's not very well defined. Do you have in your head something that's far more specific, far more well defined, that we take away through the surface warfare training process?
Well, the first thing I'd ask is surface warfare training process. You know,
that's kind of half your article too.
Yeah, but if you want to just accept the premise, you know, if your premise that there's a process in place. And we want to discuss.
I didn't say that was a process.
For the sake of argument.
Of course.
The thing we take away first and foremost, and this is the biggest counter argument that I know people think about, you know, especially the senior leaders when they're reading it. And quite honestly, I was marginally disappointed by some of my interviews that I had from some of the senior leaders, because I got exactly. The answers that I thought I would get and that you would think that I would get. Not all of them. There's some of the senior leaders that were like, they were very supportive, or even if they weren't supportive, they provided some good counterpoints. But the big thing is that we make it work. You hit on that earlier. We're the greatest Navy ever and we're super powerful. And I mean, look at what our guys are doing up in Iraq right now. And I'm sure you've seen how they've been searching around everywhere. And it's, you know, there's no match for us. And that's all great. So we make it work. But again, that previous quote, success is by happenstance, you know, not necessarily by design. And I think we ought to make it by design. Now, how we make it work, I think our SWOs are good at a lot of things. The competitive nature that we always get hit on, and that's our stereotype, and, you know, nobody likes SWOs because of that. I think that actually benefits us because we make ourselves more competitive. We expose ourselves to more things, which is why we are probably in higher demand at some of the staffs and COCOMs and whatnot. And I think that's all well and good, but I want us to be a profession. You know, one thing that sets us apart, say, from our brethren in the aviation community is that they're not worried about being good at being future COCOM staff officers and how neat it is to be in demand. They're pilots. They say, I need to be a good Hornet driver. I need to be a good Rhino driver. I need to be a good Rhino Wizzo. I need to expose myself to all these millions of things so that I might be good at 10% of them so that I can be a future COCOM staff officer. And I think that's kind of the bogus nature there. And honestly, you know, I think that's kind of what we get here, because while there are plenty of go-getters in our SWO community, and obviously there's plenty that are successful, I think that we are manning our ships at a variety of levels, but especially the division officer and department head levels, with people that either showed up or are just sticking around rather than are good. And I think that's a problem.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I'm glad you mentioned BDOC in the article, just because I remember saying it feels silly. I remember when I got in, that was like only 5 years ago, so it's like no big deal. Yeah. but even then, because they've added all these things, I left college, got in my car, went to Florida, and then suddenly it's like, hey, you're the gunno, by the way, here's Rome's retail order. It's like the whole admin system for ammo and all these things. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, it felt bad because people are counting on you and you just don't know. You don't even, you know, the basics of what's going on. Sure, you know how to work a chart and you've done some naval history and stuff like that, but that's you want to show up ready to play. You know, you want to play ball. You don't want to be practicing while everyone else is in the middle of the finals. And that's what sometimes I'm sure it feels a lot like for folks out there. And then you know, you're right. It just oftentimes comes down. You said it comes down to chance, and it reminded me of the H.G. Wells Time Machine story where he goes in the future. And then all the people wandering around, and life is lovely, but nobody knows how it works. And there's all these underground, awful gremlins doing it. Yeah. And you just wonder, like, man, how many gremlins am I creating by just letting the system fly? And then one day, you know, they come up out of the ground, and it's game over because we haven't built the and, you know, I'm not a process guy. I always say that the worst way to solve a problem, the last way to solve a problem should be an instruction. But, you know, some of these things, it's maybe not even process. It's just like spirit of process. You know, you wonder is like where I'm supposed to go. But
I agree with you there. I think that spirit and process are both in play here. You brought it up about the professional stuff. Kind of in the third piece of this, I am going to try to hit on some of the things the surface warfare community is doing right before kind of getting into a couple of my proposals of things we ought to do. You mentioned BDoc, something that you and I didn't have. I too, you know, mine was flying to Hawaii and then showing up on my ship. And I'm sure we've all had our Ensign stories of turning into submarines or, you know, or giving crappy standard commands and having the helmsman laugh at us. You know, that's kind of the reality of our nature. Now they instituted BDoc. It's a good program.
Oh, absolutely.
It's better than what there was, which was nothing. So that's good, and good on the community. Now, what I'm getting at in my articles, and I'm kind of being a jerk about it, is
wow, John Paris is being a jerk.
Yeah, which is very normal for me, is saying, hey, that is fantastic. Thanks for instituting BDoc. Thanks for instituting ADoc, which is the advanced international course, which is slightly more robust thing than the 3-week prep, you know, that we went to, you know, in Newport as ensigns. That it's those are good things. They're not good enough, and that's what I'm getting at. And everybody's like, well, fiscally constrained, yada yada, sequestration, yada yada, manpower retention, yada yada, all of those things. And those are all well and good, and I appreciate it. And as you know, I got to do it my last tour. I got to see the behind the scenes of a lot of that stuff, and it's ugly and nasty and boring and stupid, and all of those things.
Which probably means it's all important.
Right, exactly.
But if it's boring and stupid, it's probably way important.
But the point being, and one of the things I transitioned to in the second article when I'm looking at aviators, comparing us to the naval aviators and how they do their process, is it would never enter their mindset in their culture to accept people that couldn't fly airplanes. Very basic thing. It would, you know, we give our, you and I have both given our little stories of getting to the fleet and basically looking both ways and having a division of 20 sailors in front of us and having a bridge that we're supposed to stand watch on and all of those other good things. It would never occur to them to say, you know what, we need to save money because this is a physically constrained environment. So we are going to send people through API down, you know, down in Pensacola, and then we're going to send them out to their fleet squadrons based on that. You know, they're gonna do kind of their ship selection, their squadron selection, send them out to the squadrons, and the skipper's going to teach them how to fly an F-18. It would never occur to them. And I interviewed heavily the aviators and said, hey, why do you have to have this process in place? Why can't stuff that happens at the RAG happen in the fleet? And it was actually kind of funny to listen to their responses because it would stupefy them. They're like, because we can't. I'm like, yeah, but why not? They're like, because flying. And I'm like, yeah, but why not? Because they're like, because airplane. And I'm like, yeah, but why not? And it just doesn't, it would never occur to them. And it's not making fun.
No, it's a good instinct.
It's absolutely right. It's perfect. Of course you were going to send a professional out to the fleet. Of course. Of course you don't want an F-18 squadron skipper trying to train a nugget how to fly an airplane when you're operational. But yet, as surface warfare officers, as the beaten down dogs of the Navy, of which the Navy would not exist without us, we take it. And we say, you know what? We're going to accept amateurs. And you know what? We are going to be amateurs our entire careers as well. And this is fantastic. This is the greatest idea ever. Let's be amateurs. And let's be amateurs at a lot of different things too. And it's just, boggles the mind. Nukes don't do it. Aviators don't do it. SEALs don't do it. Marine infantry officers don't do it. Royal Navy warfare officers don't do it. And they're freaking good at their jobs. And, that probably irritates a lot of people. You know, some commander is going to be sitting there probably, you know, and they're saying, you know, we're professionals too, and how dare you, and this and that. And I don't mean to diss my own community, our community. I think, you know, there's a lot to be proud of, but I also think there's a lot to be disappointed with as well.
Yeah, and something to get to that sort of amateur part of me, in my heart of hearts, loves that, because it's like, you know, and I'm sorry, it's not. I'm gonna get ripped on, I know, by certain people, but like McHale's Navy, it's like, hey man, we're just gonna go out there and we're gonna do it, or Dirty Dozen. Not saying of us are criminals, but we're just, hey man, we're just gonna figure it out and we're gonna go out there and do it. And I wonder if maybe our problem is that we try to pretend that's not the way it's done.
Yeah.
So we're like, yes, we are highly specialized. Trained, and yeah, you know what? We're trained, and it's part of that is on us, you know, to make sure that we have that knowledge, which is part of that responsibility we have. But don't then pretend that's not the case. That it is, if you accept the fact that there's a certain ad hoc nature to it, if you embrace that, then I feel like our culture would get better, our ability to operate would get better, because we wouldn't look for something that's not there. They're like, where is that, you know, where is that straight-laced answer to this problem? And you're like, there isn't one. Stop looking and stop worrying, you won't have it.
Sure. I mean, you know, and ultimately, it's, you know, it's challenging writing these articles, because I know that, quite honestly, you know, nothing's going to happen out of them. They're my opinions, and, you know, and I think they're, based on a lot of discussions I've had, their opinions held by a lot of people, but I know that, you know, after Article 3 comes out, Surf War is not going to call me on the phone and say, you're right, we're changing everything. That's not going to happen. So that's a bummer. But you're right. This, you know, looking for the straight-laced answer. But see, that's the issue really at hand, and that kind of goes to the core of all of this, is that's always the answer. Hey, We're getting things done. We're deploying. We're surge deploying. We're extended deploying. We're doing all these things, and we're out there, you know. And with a few notable exceptions, especially recently, you know, we're doing it successfully and without incident. And that's all well and good, and it's true. But you know what? Nobody's firing missiles at us, and GPS works just fine, and none of our ships just sank in front of us. You know, none of us have seen the scene out of Battleship where the Samson gets, you know, shredded by aliens.
and I don't predict any of us will be seeing that scene.
Right. But probably not that scene from Aliens, but maybe from, you know.
Right. No, absolutely.
From the Country Red or the other Country Red. You know, that's certainly possible. And so now what happens when those types of things start happening, when we have a bunch of amateurs just trying to figure it out? And I realize amateur, that's a little bit of hyperbole. I'll admit
that.
But not as professionals as they could be. Let's say it that way. And the reason I bring that up is because, let's just say, let's stick with our own country and our own service. Our aviators, they don't take that mindset. And while they were, you know, burning circles in the sky over Afghanistan, you know, as they've been doing for so many years, they got the call, and now Nuggets are dropping bombs in Iraq next to, you know, displaced peoples, and say, you know, literally saving lives while killing the bad guys. They're professionals. It's because they don't take a mindset that, you know, we'll just kind of figure it out and kind of find our way and bumble along. They're like, no, you need to know how to land an aircraft. You know, on an aircraft carrier, you need to know how to drop bombs. You need to know how to buddy lays. You need to know how to tank off in the middle of the night in turbulent air over enemy territory, or else you'll never make it home. You know, all of those different things. You need to know how to strafe, you know, your first week in the squadron, because some guy, you know, some snake eater is going to call you and say, I need a strafing run here, because, or else I'm going to die. And those guys are doing it, you know, and they practice and they practice and they practice and they've got NSOC, you know, they've got Top Gun, they do their debts, they do training. Why? Because they're going to be professionals. They make that a priority. They say, we are going to not only be pilots, but we are going to be proficient at tactically employing our aircraft. And we don't, you know, we just don't say that as SWOs.
You know, and maybe, and is it, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to place blame. I'm almost trying to do the opposite. Is it SWOs, though? So you said something earlier, and you said that, you know, surface warfare is the core of the Navy, which, you know, at the end, I'm not trying to be parochial or anything, but it's the Navy's ships. You know, what's a ship? It's surface fleet. You know, okay, we'll make arguments, you know, amphibs and carriers and flat tops and what have you, but at the core of all that ability to get stuff all over the planet is for me to kick people in the face to be able to get there with, you know, with ships with pointy things that go boom. And you know, submarines too. I'll grant them that.
They're underwater SWOs. Underwater
SWOs. Yeah. Oh, come on now. Now you're going to get us into a fight. but part of that is, imagine how terrifying it would be. So all these other things that let us reach out and touch everybody, you know, the Marines, the aviators, these things are all based on this naval supremacy that's existed. So is it the SWOs, or is it the fact that we have maintained our power projection ability at the expense of the fleet, but we're unwilling to recognize? So we've been squirreled away because the assumption is, well, SWOs can do it. They'll figure it out. And so everybody else is at 100%, and, you know, we're running at, you know, 60 to 80%. Right. And it's not because we wanted to be there. It's because that's where we were put. And at the end, you know, okay, we may not, like you said, you know, you said the budget and stuff like that. I had this argument with somebody recently, and it was, hey, you know, we just got to figure out manning. And it's like, well, okay, I've got bad news for you. At a certain point, there's diminishing returns. You can't pull more bodies off ships. You have to choose how many are you going to have this many ships, or are you going to, at, you know, not proper manning, or are you going to have this many guys and not have the fleet, you know, have the ships manned to what they should be, but you're not going to have the fleet size you want. And people just aren't, folks aren't making that bet. And so the things that you don't see, like training, culturally aren't going away. It's not because of our culture, but it's just literally because they're gone, and it's the only choice.
Right.
I mean, would you say that this is a purposeful move on our part, or would you kind of agree that maybe it's more just out of necessity things have become this way?
That's an interesting question. I think that I'm sorry, I'm going to put it on us. I'm going to put it on our community. Now, here's the difficult part, and this is what I was saying earlier. The difficult part of writing these articles or making the proposals that I'm going to make is that it works right now. It does. The surface fleet works. My thesis, my opinion, my thrust of this whole argument is that it works because we're lucky and not because we're good. And that's actually something, that we had an admiral come talk to us about the other day. Do you want to be lucky or do you want to be good? And I had to chuckle. I contained myself, you know, used my self-control as I was sitting in
which
the
you're
office.
Ruining now because you're now telling everyone.
Right. But I had to chuckle sitting in the audience because I'm like, are you kidding me? You think we're good? We're not. we're all right. That's what we are. And all right gets the job done. And all right steers the ship into the wind so that the helos can launch and the F-18s can launch and the E-2s can launch. And all right gets the wind for the T-LAMs to launch and the Marines onto the beach if they ever go to the beach. All of that stuff works. And what I'm disappointed by is that, and maybe this is very anti-millennial of me, is that good enough is not good enough. I don't think it should be. And I think what differentiates us and why I put it on our community. And you know, I know you're going for the big play there of saying, well, it's necessity and war.
Well, I'm not going for the big play. You know, I think it falls on both. I just wanted to get
No, so yeah. so as a comparison, and I think, you know, with the pilots, I think the reason why they would never accept good enough, and I bring this up in the second article, was they, you know, people start dying. If a bunch of guys started crashing into, you know, started doing ram strikes and started crashing while on final into the carrier, or not being able to drop bombs, or the variety of things, they turned into a bunch of lawn darts. Then people would be like, this is outrageous. We have to bring training back. What were we thinking of taking flight school away and putting amateurs out in the fleet and yada, yada, yada. And with SWOs, you know, it basically comes down to death and destruction. Are our ships going to sink? Are they going to start, you know, breaking in half? Or the mission's not going to be met if we don't do this notional John Paris idea of being professionals? And the answer is probably no. In general, with here and there, we'll have our accidents, as everybody does, and our, you know, our poor judgments as sometimes happen, but as recently has happened, but it works. And what I'm trying to propose is that we stop accepting good enough. And I think, and this is a tough one, it's hard to quantify, and I'm certainly not high ranking enough or smart enough to apply it. But in my always right lieutenant brain, I think that if we apply it to the future, if we apply it to sitting off the coast of Country Red, and they start popping, you know, tons of missiles off at us, or foreign policy drastically changes, and we go to that big war that we all know that we're preparing for, but we won't talk about, and that starts happening, will good enough be good enough? And I don't think it will be. And I think that that is a good argument, besides just being proud of your profession, to being actual professionals. I think that the F-18 guys will be all right. Some of them are going to get shot down, but most of them won't, because they're pros and they already know how to do it today. The SWOs, not so much. What are SWOs going to do when they turn off GPS? That's a great question.
You can use my sweet camera that takes pictures of the stars. If they just go onto the internet and read my articles, no, but, John.
But Matt, your camera is, your phone is going to be dead because you weren't able to charge it because it's not electrically safe because it wasn't.
Well, I didn't say I was going to use the Android Star. I was talking about like something real. Good lord. I'm out there with my Android star chart, which I'm pretty sure doesn't read the stars. In fact, I'm 100% sure it's using GPS and just showing you where the stars are. Because that crappy little camera. And it just amuses me that, you know, here you and I are talking and other guys out there in the fleet. Maybe we are good. You know, I realize that you and I think that we have so, so far to go. But, like, maybe we are good. And maybe one of the things that makes us good is the fact that, but is that we say, like, no, we suck really bad and we need to fix it. And that's what, maybe that's what makes it work.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's inherently the mechanism is we, you know, rub our hands and say, oh man, we don't know what to do. We got to get better, et cetera, et cetera. And it's that constant fear, that idea that despite the fact that we're the biggest, most powerful Navy on the planet, you know, that we are the best military, that someone's just going to come out of left field and just knock our block off. And that's sort of, maybe that's our driving force is that's what keeps our head above the water. Well, even I listen to the kind of language I'm using, keeps our head above the water. You know, are we really that bad, or is it just guys like us out there that just want to have the 17-1 edge? Not that, you know, if you go into a fight and it's fair, you're doing it wrong. But, you know, I know neither one of us believe that, but maybe that's the case. You know, hopefully.
Well, I think, you know, and I consider it just like you have. You know, we have our training and our education and our exposure to things that, you know, you're not able to discuss on a podcast. So I think we would win, and that's fine. I think we're always going to win, and that's, you know, that's ultimately what matters. But I think we could win better. And you mentioned the 17-1 average. Damn right. I absolutely. I want to
stomp a mud hole in them.
I want a 25-1 average. Or, you know,
100, as high as you can get.
I want that. And I don't feel sorry about that. I'm an American, you know, I want, I am a professional, you know, we're professionals. We've committed ourselves to this job in this community, to one extent or another, to for however long that lasts, you know, whether that's another year or another 3 years or another 15 years, what, you know, we've committed ourselves to this and we've done a lot of good things for it. And we've served with just great people. And I think it's only right for us to want to be as awesome, to use a great word, as awesome as we can possibly be.
All right. Well, you know what? I think this is plenty of material for both of us to lose our jobs for whatever reason. Yeah. So this is awesome. We'll just throw this out here, there, and
EFC is for everyone. Yeah.
And JP's, hooray! No, I think this is solid. Perfect. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. Yeah, this was very candid, very fun, and we'll see what happens when this jam drops on the streets.
Yeah, absolutely. And they got the next two
articles.
Aviators and slow nukes comparison, and then that third one where I really put basically my resignation letter on the line of putting out some disruptive ideas and hoping not to get fired.
If you even get that far, once they hear this podcast, it's like done. Both of you shut up.
If I can make it to Monday, right?
Exactly. Hey, you know what? You just said something. So you said you're doing one article on aviators and SWO nukes, and then you're doing another one.
The second one is comparing the SWO community to aviators and SWO nukes, and my main comparison there is, what do each community deliver to the fleet on day one? That's the basic premise. That. And then the third one, I'm going to talk about some of the things the SWO community is doing right, some of the things I surprisingly, you know, oh my goodness, I think they're doing some things wrong, and then put together my proposals. So I'm not just a millennial wanking here. I'm going to put forth two proposals on the ways I think that we can make ourselves a little bit more of a professional and more efficient force.
All right, perfect, man. And that's we'll wrap it up there, really. There you go, everybody. That's the show. John, thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thank you.
Great content from the Center for International Maritime Security. Like the Sea Control podcast? It's at your fingertips. Go to www.cimsec.org. Don't forget to sign up at www.simsec.org/about/membership to get our articles and announcements by email. And hey, if you feel inspired, feel free to write us an article or two, or five. Make sure to check out our partners. Our friends at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute produce the Sea Control Asia Pacific edition. Our friends at the Phoenix Think Tank produce Sea Control East Atlantic. This and other fine forums can be found on our homepage. Join the discussion.